Yo, I don't know. I don't know if this sounds any different, but hey, what's up? What's up? I just got a new microphone and it's fucking amazing. What's good, guys? What's going on? What's going on? I hope y'all have been good. This has been episode 19. Well, this is episode. No, I'm wrapping up the episode right now. This podcast is done. This is episode 19 of the Fill in the Blank Interlude podcast with your host, Naoto Wakabayashi. What is up? You know, you're going to be hearing this on Monday, aka today or yesterday or however you may, you know, whenever you listen to this. This is going to come out on Monday. I'm recording this on a Sunday. So actually, wait, I'm tripping. I'm releasing this on Tuesday. I'm recording this on Monday because it's Canada Day here. So happy Canada Day, I guess. I mean, yeah. No, downtown was fucked. And, you know, I tried to go there for the gym and it was really, really whack navigating through the vast sea of people. And also, it was just, you know, this is a good day for colonizers, not necessarily for the people that inhabited this land initially. So, I mean, all I want to say is, I think we should be thankful of this country and like the opportunities that it has provided and just the things that it has done all over the world. But I think that's a very important part that we need to acknowledge. And, you know, so it doesn't happen again. And so that the people that are disproportionately affected by colonization can, you know, at least I wouldn't necessarily say it's a major step forward, but at least it's a step, you know? So just want to give a shout out to everyone out there celebrating Canada Day today. Oh, man. What the fuck is up? What's good? What is good, guys? You know, I just basically came through from from the gym. I'm about to go out and, you know, so like go out to a patio somewhere after this. But man, I'm getting close to finishing my book, Rockonomics by the late Alan Krueger, and it's incredible. It's like the perfect book for me, the way he relates economic theories and discusses the music industry. It's just all really, really cool stuff. The only thing is, I wish I got into game theory a little bit more. I mean, I do kind of understand it, and I guess like zero sum game, but you know, that's nothing that I can't look up right after. I mean, I'm not saying that's like what the majority of the book is all about. Like, they have various economic principles and theories scattered throughout the book. So that's just the only part where I'm thinking back to my McGill education, I'm thinking like, damn, I should have taken a course in that. But, you know, every day is a journey to learn, I guess. That is definitely not a quote. I just made that shit up. You know, so I think we have the power to learn new things and grow as people. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to do this summer, man. Learn more about game theory. You know, I've been thinking about something. Let's scratch out, you know, something's been weighing heavy on my mind, and it's something that I have a feeling that, I mean, talking to my peers and talking to people in my age group, it's not something that people tend to talk about, and that would be ownership. And by ownership, it's not necessarily, you know, owning your own business. I mean, that does come with it. And I guess like owning your own property, but I guess it's the idea of having freedom and having the ability to not have somebody be accountable for your actions. If that, or no, not necessarily have someone else be accountable, but have somebody watching over your eye and you're working to build up someone else's dream. You know, I mean, talking to peers and just people that I've surrounded myself with lately, everybody is sort of just going with the flow. And you know, I talk about all these things like owning my own business and owning my own properties with a plural, with a motherfucking plural. And you get a lot of people that try to push their own insecurities on you. And it's like, man, are you even listening right now? Like, it just, as I bring these things up, they just say all these excuses of, oh, but housing's so expensive. You know what? Like, opening up a business is hard. What if it fails? What if it fucking fails, dude? What if it fails? We're young. And mind you, these aren't people with families. These aren't, you know, these people should not be risk averse at this point. They're coming away with a college education. You know what I mean? Like, it's just people want to be too comfortable too early. And that's kind of nuts to me. Because let's say on average in the society that we exist in, people live till the age of 80 on average. I think it's a little bit less, but let's say 80 to make the numbers clear. So if you're 20, or if you're at least close to 20, you've only lived a quarter of your life, and now you want to play it safe? Man, I never get that. So I don't know. You get a lot of people where they just feel comfort in being a slave, essentially, and being not owning their own shit and just being content with having someone else put their ducks in a row without realizing that the person that's putting those ducks in a row are taking 60% of the value. You know what I mean? Like, it's nuts to me, man, that people are just fighting for middle management. Oh, fuck that, dude. Fuck that. That's why I started this thing. That's why I wanted to start my own brand. This is why I want to get away from the mentality of, oh, I'm going to work at this company and build my way up and then maybe reach a senior position and still have a manager looking over me. This idea is something that, I mean, God bless my dad and my parents, but it's been something that has been force-fed onto them. And growing up, that's something that they've, you know, for my own benefit, they push this idea of having a secure job. But, you know, I see it firsthand. I just don't think my dad especially is happy with that life. You know, I've tried to ask him before what his dreams and aspirations are, but that he doesn't, or at least what they were, and he doesn't necessarily have an answer for it. I mean, maybe he never had dreams and aspirations in the first place. That could be one thing. Or maybe he let those things die. And look, it's not like my family were in a bad situation, but I see an opportunity to maximize my own happiness and to try and do something to actually make an impact in this world. Because, you know, it doesn't, for me, with this whole music thing, it doesn't stop at starting my own label or being the boss or having a number one record or having a Grammy, like a Grammy winning record. Like it doesn't stop for me there. There is philanthropy involved in all of this because music influences people in a way that I believe no other art form, no other force in the world does, other than, you know, like nature and shit. Because, man, once global warming gets really fucked up, like, we're going to, we can't do anything about that, you know? But other than that, I'm talking about, like, when it comes to the arts and just human creation, all these different things, I think music has the greatest influence. All right, one sec. Yo. So, back to what I was saying about ownership is I don't want someone to benefit off of my work because I can't see the value in it. You know, I think that's also another big mission of mine is teaching artists how to know their own value for their own work, because, man, giving up a big percentage for the advance, not worth it. Giving up your royalties, a good chunk of your royalties for that advance, not worth it. An advance is basically just a loan. Working in the financing industry, it really has, I mean, I always knew this with people, but man, it's so apparent that people have such short-term behaviors where they're not thinking 10, 20, 30, 40 years in advance, where they want the immediate thing, or where they think that, okay, I'm gonna go on vacation, I'm just gonna discount the future. That kind of thing, that kind of thought process will get you nowhere. But you know what? It benefits the financing companies. It benefits, you know, the short-term behavior benefits corporate entities. And that's what I think with ownership in the music industry. It benefits big labels, agents, managers. It's in the industry's best interests to keep the artist as the dopey creative that doesn't dabble in business matters. And that has to change. That has to change, because whether an artist acknowledges it or not, there is a monetary value to that art. There is a capitalistic aspect to that art. There is a transaction of value that comes from that art. Whether they acknowledge it or not, man, yeah, I guess that's what I gotta say. That's what I gotta say. Trying to think if I have anything else to add Before I move on to the next topic, I feel like I did. No, I think I got through everything, you know? So, again, this is why I'm starting my own podcast, my own brand, because, man, I don't want to... My whole thing is, like, why not create my own opportunities? And I know my own self-worth. Why does it have to benefit a larger brand? You know, why do I have to attach myself to a larger brand? Well, I mean, I'm not saying that I won't in the future. Shouts out to all the endorsements. But I mean, what I mean is that, like, why would I like just want to just, you know, work for one brand without starting my own and without having my brand and another brand collaborate? That's all I'm trying to say, man. Protect your masters, protect your royalties, protect your percentages on everything. On everything, because I promise you, 90% of that time, that advance isn't worth it for the artist. And I'm going to tell you something. A label signs 10 acts, and they are profitable as long as one pops off. So let that marinate. Let that marinate. About a 10% chance, you know, you as an artist are going to benefit. Because trust me, a label has no problem shelving you. So while I talk about ownership, this is something that I want to talk about with the podcast before this happened over the weekend. But, you know, Taylor Swift got into something over the weekend, and she actually, it was actually about, you know, her own ownership. I'm gonna go to her blog post that she wrote, just to give you guys a little bit of context as to what happened. Hold on. One moment. There we go. Okay. For years, I asked, pleaded for a chance to own my own work. Instead, I was given an opportunity to sign back up to Big Machine Records and earn one album back at a time. One for every new one I turned in. I walked away because I knew once I signed that contract, Scott Borchetta would sell the label, thereby selling me and my future. I had to make the excruciating choice to leave behind my past. Music I wrote on my bedroom floor and doors, videos I dreamed up and paid up. And paid for from the money I earned playing in bars, then clubs, then arenas, then stadiums. Some fun facts about today's news. I learned that Scooter Braun's purchase of my masters as it was announced to the world. All I could think was the incessant, manipulative bullying I've received at his hands for years. Like when Kim Kardashian orchestrated an illegally recorded snippet of a phone call to be leaked, and then Scooter got his two clients together to bully me online about it. Or when his client, Kanye West, organized a revenge porn music video which strips my body naked. Now Scooter has stripped me of my life's work, that's a bar, that I wasn't given an opportunity to buy. Essentially, my musical legacy is about to lie in the hands of someone who tried to dismantle it. This is my worst case scenario. This is what happens when you sign a deal at 15 to someone whom the term loyalty is certainly just a contractual concept. And when that man says music has value, he means its value is beholden to men who had no part in creating it. When I left my master's in Scott's hands, I made peace with the fact that eventually he would sell them. Never in my worst nightmares did I imagine the buyer would be Scooter. Anytime Scott Borchetta has heard the word Scooter Braun escape my lips, it was when I was either crying or trying not to. He knew what he was doing. They both did. Controlling a woman who didn't want to be associated with them. In perpetuity, that means forever. Thankfully, I'm now signed to a label, UMG. Shouts out to Universal Music Group and Lucien Grange. She didn't say this. Nor did she say bar earlier. That was just my commentary. Thankfully, I'm now signed to a label that believes I should own anything I create. Thankfully, I left my past in Scott's hands and not my future. And hopefully, young artists or kids with musical dreams will read this and learn about how to better protect themselves in a negotiation. You deserve to own the art you make. I will always be proud of my past work, but for a healthier option, lover out August 23rd. Sad and grossed out. So this has caused quite a stir amongst her own fan base to the point where they're now attacking Scooter Braun. I'm going to read Big Machine Label Group's post regarding these. I guess that blog post that Taylor wrote. So it's time for some truth, is what it's called. Blah blah blah. In regard to a post earlier today from Taylor, it's time to set some things straight. Ooh, this is a bar. Taylor's dad, Scott Swift, was a shareholder in Big Machine Records, LLC. We first alerted all the shareholders on Thursday, June 20th, for an official shareholders call scheduled for Tuesday, June 25th. On the 6:25 call, the June 25th call, the shareholders are made aware of the pending deal with Ithaca Holdings and had 3 days to go over all details of the proposed transaction. We then had a final call on Friday, June 28th, in which the transaction passed with a majority vote and 3 of the 5 shareholders voting yes with 92% of the shareholders' vote. Out of courtesy, I personally texted Taylor at 9:06 p.m. Saturday, June 29th, to inform her prior to the story breaking on the morning of Sunday, June 30th, so she could hear it directly from me. I guessed it might somehow be possible that her dad, Scott, 13 manager lawyer Jay Shoddy's, who represents Scott Swift on the shareholder calls, or 13 management executive and Big Machine LLC shareholder Frank Bell, who was on the shareholder calls, didn't say anything to Taylor over the prior 5 days. I guess it's possible that she might not have seen my text, but I truly doubt that she woke up to the news when everyone else did. I'm attaching a few very important deal points. Taylor and I, so this is a offer that Big Machine Label Group wanted to give Taylor, just a side note, because I did skip over something. Dom Passman went over this document in great detail, reported the terms to her in great detail. Shouts out the attorney Dom Passman, wrote an amazing book called Everything You Need to Know About the Music Industry. One moment. All right, and we're back. I had to get the homie through. He's just chilling downstairs now. But to continue on, so what I was talking about earlier, so this article says, Taylor and I then talked about through the deal together. As you will read, 100% of all Taylor Swift assets were to be transferred to her immediately upon signing the new agreement. We were working together on a new type of deal for our new streaming world that was not necessarily tied to albums, but more of a length of time. So what Taylor was saying was about how, I'd have to earn back my albums. That wasn't true either. It says, we are an independent record company. We do not have tens of thousands of artists and recordings. My offer to Taylor for the size of our company was extraordinary, but it was also all I could offer as I'm responsible for dozens of artists' careers and over 120 executives and their families. So this is what I mean by like a record label. Like with a record label, it could, like I said, with like having to sign 10 people, but you know, like a record label can still be profitable if one blows up. Like all they need is one person to blow up. So you're seeing it in this example. Taylor and I remained on very good terms, blah, blah, blah. As we both posted on our socials, we saluted each other and cheered each other on. The morning that the new Taylor / UMG announcement was going to be made, she texted me shortly before letting me know that the announcement was coming in a few minutes. As there were comments about being in tears or close to it, anytime my new partner, Scooter Braun's name was brought up, I certainly never experienced that. Was I aware of some prior issues between Taylor and Justin Bieber? Yes. But there was also times where Taylor knew that I was close to Scooter and that Scooter was a very good source of information for upcoming album releases, tours, etc. And I'd reach out to him for information on our behalf. Scooter was never anything but positive about Taylor. He called me directly about Manchester to see if Taylor would participate. She declined. This is a text Taylor sent to me on Monday, November 19th at 8:57 a.m. So, man, Scott from Big Machine Label Group, he has the receipts, goddamn. So what he said, what Taylor said was, Scott, I hope this finds you well. What is this? She's so trash at this. What? Like, anytime someone starts off with, I hope anything at the beginning of emails, they don't hope shit for you. Like, they don't give a fuck. So, Scott, I hope this finds you well. Since communication ran dry on our negotiations, I've done what I told you I would do and gone out exploring other options. Owning my masters was very important to me, but I've since realized that there are other things that mean even more to me in the bigger picture. So here goes Taylor talking about like fucking how, man, she wanted the opportunity to own her masters. It's like, motherfucker, you got your opportunity. You got your opportunity to own your masters and you didn't take it. You didn't take it. So that's on you. So she says, I had a choice whether to bet on my past or bet on the future. And I think knowing me, you can guess which one I chose. Jesus. I also saw a rare opportunity to affect positive change for a lot of other artists with the leverage I have right now. I know you believe in the same things I do, and I'd like to think you'd be proud of what I've negotiated. Okay, blah, 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 blah. Sending you a hug and most sincere gratitude. I mean, I completely agree with Taylor that artists should own their own masters, and this is something that she should have considered when she was 15. And I get that. But what I don't fuck with is the fact that she's playing victim. That is really wet. Scooter Braun is honestly, I mean, I don't stand the guy, but he's honestly one of the dopest managers of the industry. And man, he just bought Big Label Machine, what is it? Big Machine Label Group for $300 million. Well, I mean, I don't think, well, his company did. But $300 million, it's not like he bought her catalog for pennies. Like, I don't understand this whole, like, victimization that's happening. It's like, bro, you had a chance. You had a chance to get your own masters. You didn't take it. It's not like the Beatles cried when Michael Jackson bought their masters. That's the thing. If you really wanted them, you should have gotten it. You know what I mean? Now, what I'm a bit confused about is this proposed deal, if it was a record deal or if it was just a strictly, it was just a deal for her masters. That's what I'm kind of iffy about. Because now that I'm reading it again, it kind of sounds like it was for a record deal, but I'm not too sure. I don't think, I don't think it was a record deal. I'm pretty sure it wasn't, because this blog post doesn't necessarily to remain at Big Machine Records. Okay. So she was to remain at Big Machine Records. So that's what it meant. Yeah, it's kind of wild. But I mean, I just don't understand. Like, I don't get why she couldn't just buy her own masters. Like, that's kind of wild. Yeah. I mean, regardless, fuck Taylor for playing the victim. Wow. But I'm sure, like, that's the thing. I'm sure she could have bought her own masters, like, for $300 million. I'm sure she has that in the bank. Like, why didn't she buy Big Machine Label Group? The fuck? That doesn't, like, why didn't her, like, as an entity, buy Big Machine Label Group? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And again, it just doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like that was something that Taylor thought about. Like, it's kind of crazy. It's pretty fucking crazy. So, with that, I would say, yes, I understand that she should get her masters back. I mean, without them, you don't get your mechanical royalties. But she has to stop doing this. Like, she's honestly too big for this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mean lashing out, but I mean, like, playing victim. You know what I mean? Like, she did this shit with Kanye, she did this shit with, like, Kim and shit. Like, that's kind of wild. So, anyways, that's my hot take. Man, do I have some shit to play for you guys? A lot of amazing albums came out, which I won't talk about because I still need to sit on them. But I fucked with Indigo. I fucked with the Mustard album. I fucked with the Daniel Caesar project. But I'm going to play Could Have Been by the Could Have Been remix with Tone Stith. That shit was amazing. So check it out.
Somebody tell me the answers. Me and you isn't the answer. Me and you isn't. Maybe I'm telling myself that, but there ain't nothing that'll change that. What good would it be if I knew how you felt about me? Yeah. It could've been right, but I was wrong. Only think about you and I'm alone. Part of me that cared is almost gone, and I know that I can't get caught up. We could've been, and we try to pretend. Every now and again, we don't dream about, don't think about what we could've been. No, I'm holding it in, cause I know in the end, you dream about, I think about what we could've been. We could've been, we could've, damn, remember, remember the night in Miami, first time you put your arms around me, I'm up reminiscing, Thinking about you isn't helping. Thinking about you doesn't tell me what good it would do if I decide to face the truth. It could have been right, but I was wrong. I only think about you when I'm alone. You only hit me up when she's not home. And that's why I can't get caught up. We could have been, and we try to pretend. Every now and again, we don't dream about, don't think about what we could have been. Oh, yeah. Holding it in. I know in the end, you dream about, I think about what we could have been. We could have been. We could have. We could have been. We could have been. We could have been. Every time I close my eyes, I see your face. Should I hit you up or keep giving you space? I bet by now somebody's taking up my place. I know deep down inside I'm making a mistake. Letting you walk away, the memory's stalking me. It's getting hard for me, 'cause you're a part of me. And I know we can get caught. About, don't think about what we could have been. Now I'm holding it in, 'cause I know in the end, you dream about, I think about what we could have been. We could have been. We could have. We could have been, baby. We could have been.
So that was Could Have Been remix with Tone Stip by her. And you know what? You know what? I thought Tone Stip killed it more than Bryson Tiller. I'm fucking sorry. But what I was gonna say about Taylor, that what I kind of realized is that she's been saying like, oh man, Scooter's the one that's gonna own my royalties. I mean, no, sorry, my masters. It's like, I'm pretty sure his, like, company is, you know? Like, it's, that's why I don't understand. It'd be basically, like, Big Machine Label Group owning her masters. It's basically the same thing. It's just that Scooter Braun owns that company. It's not like, I don't think the mechanical, yes, Scooter's going to get a percentage of her mechanicals, but I'm pretty sure it's going to get dispersed all around the company and, you know, invested in other things. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think, like, I think she's making it to be more malicious than it actually is, you know? And it's, like, it's crazy. I'm sure she has enough money to buy back her own masters. I mean, hey, Rihanna did it. Frank Ocean did it. They're not complaining. I mean, I get it. It's hard, but fuck, man. I don't know. I just feel like in this situation, she's not taking enough accountability in her own actions, and she's just blaming other people, which is whack to me, which is really, really whack to me. So I'll end that on that note. This is a long-ass fucking episode. It's 40 minutes, guys. It's 40 motherfucking minutes. And with that, I gotta go celebrate Canada Day and go find a patio somewhere. So with that being said, hope you guys have been good. This is episode 19 of the Fill in the Blank Interlude podcast with your host, Naoto Wakabayashi, and I'm fucking out.